Who here has had swimming lessons? I remember having swimming lessons when I was in elementary school at a camp that was close to my house with Mr. Greg, who had this mustache, and every time he would come out of the water, there would be like snot on it. And that's just like one of these memories that have always stuck with me. And I remember going with my brother and with three of my cousins each summer for 3 or 4 years. And remembering, you know, at first hanging on to the side and kicking with my legs to, at some point much later on, diving into the deep end and pulling up rings, right? We learn to swim if we're fortunate. And I'm mindful of this because our kids are starting swimming lessons this week, so I'm thinking a lot about swimming. But whether we have had swimming lessons or not, not all of us are entirely comfortable with water. You know, when Leah and I were living close to the ocean, I think that's where I liked my water, where I could see it and admire it and maybe stick my feet in it. But that was about it. And I hope that my kids, through swimming lessons, probably do not have those same fears that I do. But water, for a lot of folks, is a scary thing. I think that's the context that we need to approach our gospel story this morning. Water is a scary thing. If you were a Galilean living at the time of Jesus, in the first century, you were probably scared of water. They didn't have YMCA programs that taught kids how to swim. Granted, you might have been noble, where you might have been able to swim, or your family might have been fishermen. Just by the location of your family's occupation, you might have learned basic survival skills. But the Sea of Galilee did not have a resort attached to it, and people did not go and spend time swimming as recreation. In fact, if you were a Galilean in the first century, you would have been familiar with the origin story found in Genesis chapter 1, which talks about how God's Spirit hovered over the dark void. This dark void is the water in the story from Genesis. So this dark void had something to do with chaos, that this place, that the deep water, the open water, was a place that you don't want to go. It was a scary place. It was a chaotic place. Jesus, in our story, we're actually picking up this story from last Sunday, after Jesus and his disciples share that intimate meal with thousands of people. After that meal is done, Jesus sends his disciples across the lake ahead of him. Because if you remember from our story last week, John the Baptist has been murdered, and Jesus has been trying to get away to grieve. In our story this morning, he gets that opportunity. As he is dismissing the crowds, he sends his disciples across the sea so that he can go up a mountain and pray. And while the disciples are out at the sea, which, by the way, is much, the Sea of Galilee is much smaller than Lake Champlain. So a little bit bigger than Lake Iroquois. It's really not a big lake. Storms can pop up pretty regularly there. And it says that the disciples were struggling out there, that even the wind was against them. And then out of nowhere, Jesus comes as if he's walking on the water, and these frightened disciples fear that they are seeing a ghost. And Peter yells out from the boat, "Jesus, if it really is you, let me come out to you. And Jesus says, let it be so. Peter walks out, and then we get this sinking sensation, right? And when I was little, I remember hearing this story and thinking of the Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner cartoons, where like Wile E. Coyote doesn't know that he's run off of the cliff until like he's stopped and he's like looking around. And I imagine they actually got that from this story in the Gospels. But he's sinking, and he yells out for help, and Jesus grabs him. And then we've got this weird saying about, oh, ye of little faith, do you not believe? And I think that that's often seen as a judgment on Peter. However, this is the same person who talks about people who have the faith the size of a mustard seed can move mountains. So the idea of little faith to Jesus is maybe more complex than what we would dare to think. In any case, they get back into the boat, and this storm subsides, and they worship Jesus as the Son of God. I think that there are a lot of ways that we could think through this passage, and I think that if any of you have been in church for any period of time, you've heard this sermon many times before. Often, when preachers have this text, we often hear a message like, well, just keep your eyes on Jesus, or our faith is cause to doubt when we take our eyes off of Jesus. And I think that that's fine. That's one way of going with this passage. But I think that there are a few other interesting ways that this passage can turn. Mindful that in the boat, the 12 disciples are on a stormy, on stormy water. There are Peter, Andrew, James, and John, who are fishermen, who might have had some skill on the water, who might have even been able to swim to survive. The rest of the disciples, however, not so much. Tax collectors and day laborers, zealots, like possibly Judas Iscariot. These are people who worked fields or stone and were never close to the water. So when it talks about these folks being afraid, they are really afraid. Imagine being in a boat that feels like it's sinking and you not knowing how to swim. That's the danger here. And when Peter steps out of the boat and then looks around and sees what is happening and he starts to sink, I think that there's something here for us as a metaphor. One of, I think, the more illustrative psalms is Psalm 69. I think it resonates well here. Save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck. I sink in deep mire where there is no foothold. I have come into deep waters, and the flood sweeps over me. I am weary with my crying. My throat is parched. My eyes grow dim with waiting for my God. But as for me, my prayer is to you, O Lord. At an acceptable time, O God, in the abundance of your steadfast love, answer me. With your faithful help, rescue me from sinking in the mire. Lead me, let me be delivered from my enemies and from this deep water. Do not let the flood sweep over me, or the deep swallow me up, or the pit close its mouth over me. For the Lord hears the needy and does not despise his own that are in bonds. Let heaven and earth praise him, the seas and everything that move in them. So perhaps, instead of trying to question how faithful or unfaithful Peter was and how unfaithful or unfaithful we are, what if we were to think about this feeling? Have you ever felt like the water has come up to your neck? like you have begun looking around and you feel frightened, like everything is sinking. I would imagine that the answer is yes, but if not, then I'd like to see you after church because I want to know your secret. Because I have a feeling that all of us from time to time have felt like we are sinking. Perhaps it's the loss of someone that is close to us, or the loss of a job, or a transition from one job to another. Perhaps we've done something that has changed our world forever, and we don't know what that means. Perhaps it's a combination of things, a body that doesn't respond as it used to, and some financial risk compiled with worry about our children and a general unease about everything that is happening in this world right now. Some of us, even today, feel as if we're sinking into a deep mire where there is no foothold. And yet, as people of faith, we are reminded over and over again that there is no place that we can go where God is not. You know, this is also the theme in our passage from 1 Kings. In it, Elijah, the great prophet of God, has continued to speak out against the evils and corruption of the administration of his time. And his life has been threatened. So he flees to the desert. And I think that it's important to hear Elijah's refrain here. He says it twice in our passage. When he's asked, "Elijah, what are you doing here?" He responds, "I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. For the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away." The same wording is used twice here. And I think about the times that we use our own kind of mantras or sayings to get us through difficult times, like "keep calm and carry on," those sayings that we repeat often to ourselves, like "I am enough," or "one day at a time," or "one footstep at a time," and so on. See, in 1 Kings, God comes to Elijah as a gentle wind and gives him hope, and he gives him work to do. In our gospel, Jesus immediately reaches his hand out and catches Peter as he is about to sink. So perhaps our passage this morning is less about keeping our eyes on Jesus. Rather, it is a comforting acknowledgement that our God is always with us, even when it's really stormy. Our God is able to provide comfort and support, to help us grieve, to give us patience with our failures, gentleness with our anger, and a plan to move forward. But there is one other thing that I'd like to leave you with from this passage, because many people have focused here on Peter and what type of faith he expresses in this story. Many have seen Peter as lacking faith once he got outside of the boat. Recently, theologian Mitzi Smith argued that perhaps his lack of faith happened while he was still in the boat, when Jesus is approaching and he says, "Jesus, if it's really you, let me come out." Perhaps, as Smith argues, Peter should have stayed in the boat with the other disciples, because that's where disciples belonged. That's where Jesus told them to go. And especially Peter, a skilled fisherman, someone who is used to being in a boat. When he left the boat to surf with Jesus, the boat lost one of its best leaders to handle the situation that was presenting itself. Sometimes faith is seeing a boat for what it is, a shared experience and opportunity to lean on one another, to encourage one another in a storm while we are all waiting for God. You see, Peter, though, was eager to leave his shipmates and to join Jesus rather than to wait for Jesus to come to everyone on the boat. And you notice that in the story, it's not only until Jesus reaches the boat that the storm itself is calmed. Perhaps we need to leave the walking on water to Jesus. Perhaps it is our role to stay in the boat, to work together, to support one another with our gifts while we wait on the miracles of God. You know, we are aware of the heightened tensions that have developed this week as President Trump has used threatening rhetoric toward North Korea, a rhetoric that has been matched by the Asian state. We've also seen similar language used when he talked about Venezuela. Yesterday, white nationalists marched on Charlottesville, Virginia, in protest of the removal of a Robert E. Lee monument. They were met with counter-protesters, and someone drove a car into a crowd of those counter-protesters where one person was killed and 19 people were injured. You know, these issues are big and complicated, and I don't claim to know the answers to them. My faith tells me that violence and threats of violence are contrary to the gospel of Jesus. My faith tells me that hate is not a human right, and it stands against all that Jesus proclaimed. But I think that I must do more than cast my own personal judgments on such things. It's a riff on Henry Nouwen. I must offer peace this day where it is possible. I must bring a smiling face and words of healing. I must let go of anger and resentment. I must forgive and love. I must trust that the little bit of love that I sow now will bear many fruits here in this world and in the life to come. And I must stay in the boat and work with others to keep it afloat in a storm until Jesus performs a miracle. May God's presence dwell in each of you richly, no matter where you find yourself this week. Amen.